So we'll see a nice big full moon, and then in the middle of the night, the moon will just seem to fade away as it goes into the shadow of the Earth. Quite dramatic. And this is the first of a series of four. There's another one in October of this year and two more next year that are part of this tetrad, I believe they call it.
How common is that to have a tetrad, to have four such events in such a quick space of time?
Well, it's not all that rare. The last time we had one was in 2003-2004, and the next one is in 2032 and 2033. So they're not all that rare. There's going to be eight of them, eight sets of these four eclipses during the course of the next century.
Well, I think astronomers have gotten pretty good at this over the centuries, from Galileo to Copernicus and Kepler, and even to Aristotle way before that. So it's not too difficult to track the next eclipse. But how is that done? How is that scientists can figure out decades in advance what's going to happen?
Well, lucky for us is that the planets move in a very predictable way. It's just a very simple, I guess, well, maybe not simple for everybody and not simple for me, but simple mathematics that are used to explain the orbits of the celestial objects. And it's all controlled by the gravity of the Earth and the Sun and the Moon. And we can predict very precisely where these things will be far into the future and know where they were far into the past.
So this is April, which means spring. The vernal equinox was about 3 weeks ago. Obviously, we're tilted a certain angle toward the sun that's different than it is in the wintertime. How do the angles of the Earth and also the moon, as they make their respective orbits around the sun and around the Earth, how does that determine really the best place to view an eclipse?
Well, for a lunar eclipse, really, as long as you're on the nighttime side of the Earth, you will be able to see it. If you can see the moon in the sky when it is in the shadow, you'll be able to see it. More people can see lunar eclipses than solar eclipses, because with a solar eclipse, the moon shadow is touching a small part of the Earth, and you have to be lucky enough to be underneath that small area. But with a lunar eclipse, as long as you're on the half of the Earth that is facing the moon when it is in the shadow, you'll be able to see it.
I remember watching a lunar eclipse. This was probably 1999 or 2000, and it was the middle of the night, of course, and it was very much a reddish hue. And I think that's probably what's going to be happening tomorrow night, or tomorrow morning, rather, as well. It's going to take on a reddish color. Why does it do that?
Yeah, that's very typical of all eclipses, or lunar eclipses, I should say. The red color has to do with the sunlight going through the Earth's atmosphere. The sun is shining and hitting the Earth, but enough light hits the atmosphere, and the atmosphere bends the longer wavelengths of light, the red light, into the shadow. So the shadow is kind of filled with a red amount of light, and that light hits the moon and gives it a reddish look. The amount of reddening varies from one eclipse to another, depending on how centralized the moon is into the shadow. And also, it tells us a little bit about the state of the atmosphere. I remember back in the, I guess it was the mid-90s or early, maybe late 90s, there was a lunar eclipse that happened a few years after Mount Pinatubo erupted, and that threw up so much dust, volcanic dust, up into the upper atmosphere, it really darkened the eclipse that we had, and the moon was practically invisible. But there's been other eclipses that I've seen where the moon goes into the shadow and is very clearly and easily visible up there in the sky. So how dark it gets really kind of varies. So that's one of the fun things about an eclipse, is trying to, you know, see how dark it gets and enjoying that view.
What do these celestial events teach us about our solar system? Is there still data to be studied every time we have an eclipse, lunar or solar, or are these eclipses so commonplace that there's just nothing else to learn now?
Well, all the orbital mechanics are pretty much worked out. I mean, we understand that very clearly, and there's really not a whole lot that can be gained from that. But the atmosphere and how red that moon looks, that's something that we really can't predict precisely. So that's always good to get measurements of, you know, how dark that moon is. Another thing that I know has happened in some past eclipses, it's a time when amateur astronomers and other astronomers like to really observe the moon closely to see if there are any impacts from meteors that would hit the moon. Sometimes you can get a meteorite impact on the moon, and it can cause a short little burst of light. And that's always very interesting to try to capture that, because that's something that we have seen rarely, but it's still, you know, really difficult to see.
Okay, so sometimes there are brief windows in which you can see something you didn't normally see, or there's some data to be gleaned from these quick events.
Right, yeah, and I don't remember all the facts on it, but I seem to think that there was an eclipse a few years ago that happened right around the time of a meteor shower that was going on, and so that lent itself to higher chance of seeing some of those flashes from the meteors.
Well, it's 2014, John. 2012 is 2 years behind us. We're all here. Nostradamus and the Mayans had their predictions about these cataclysmic events that would happen. And I think there's even some talk now on the internet about the blood moon prophecy and what this is going to mean, et cetera. I'm wondering if astronomers have a different take on these supposed predictions than the rest of us who are just amateur stargazers.
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems like there's always some sort of doomsday prediction that comes along, and this one is really no different. I'm sure that there's people that are going to prepare for a doomsday event, and then Tuesday morning, life will still go on, and so... I know for one, I'm not going to run up my credit card bill any more than it already is.
There you go. Not investing in any underground shelters.
Right. Yeah.
Bottled water.
Right. I think we'll be fine. It's just something to enjoy, a visual event to get out there and see it. And, you know, I don't think it's going to, I know it's not going to cause the end of the world.
And again, what are some of the particulars about when this event happens? It's pretty early in the morning. I don't think many people in Michigan are awake except for maybe our own host, Melissa Benmark, at that time of day.
Yeah, well, it is a thing that's going to happen in the wee hours of the morning. The partial phase of the eclipse begins at 1:58 a.m. on Tuesday morning. So stay up late Monday night or get up really early Tuesday morning. And then the total phase of the eclipse starts at 3:06 and totality ends at 4:25, and then the partial phase ends, so the whole thing is over at 5:33 in the morning. Hopefully we will have clear weather and we'll be able to see this eclipse. I know that typically, or in recent years with the internet, there's usually some webcasts of the eclipse going on from places that have clearer skies. So if you really want to see it and you get up and it's cloudy when you look out and you can't see the moon, maybe try getting on the internet and see if you can find a site somewhere that's doing a live webcast of the moon.
John French is the interim director of the Abrams Planetarium at Michigan State University. John, thanks.
Thank you.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.